to another episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I am Burl Love, your host, editor of the Enquirer, and back with me as guest host is our reporter extraordinaire, Patty Gallagher Newberry. Welcome back, Patty.
Thank you, Burl. You got my name right. Yay.
I did get your name right. Well, you have three to choose from, so I have to make sure, you know, all words in their right order. So you have had a big story this week. But before we get into that, I want to tee up our special guest, and it's a big one. You have brought to us, Patty, John Pepper, retired CEO of Procter & Gamble, and just a driving force in a lot of community work during his career, including being instrumental in the Underground Railroad Freedom Center, which is honoring him. So before we talk about that and bring him on, the big story you've been working on as well. It seems like you have nothing but big stories, Patty.
That's my specialty.
That is your specialty. You have been following the case of Aman Suleiman, who this past week was released from the ICE detention facility, well, the Butler County Jail, which is serving as an ICE detention facility, and you have spoken with him. Can you bring our reader or listeners up to date on what's going on with Suleiman?
Right. That was a big surprise last week. I had just finished a very long story about his upcoming asylum trial, which was supposed to begin in Cleveland. So I had that all keyed up, ready, edited, locked down. And then a couple hours later, heard from his attorneys that it looked like he was going to be released. This was unexpected. He was headed to trial. And as he would say later at a press conference about his release, he thought any day he was back on a plane to Egypt and resume a life of difficulty, which included torture and, he believed, certain death. So, he was released around 1 p.m. from the Butler County Jail. He'd been held in detention for 72 days by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And importantly, his asylum was restored almost immediately. So he is now out of Butler County Jail. He's back living in Cincinnati. He has asylum status, and he will soon be seeking a green card, citizenship, and bringing his family over from Egypt. So quite a turn in a big story.
Quite a 180, and probably one of the most high-profile stories we've had, or cases that we've had locally related to the Trump administration's crackdown on illegal immigrants. And in his case, there was a lot of community support as well. He had been a chaplain at Cincinnati Children's. Hard to find anyone to say anything bad about him. However, he was on the FBI's radar. It turns out that they were incorrect on some of the information that they had in terms of his activities before he came to this country. It was surprising to see that 180 where, as you said, it seemed like he was facing certain deportation, and now he has his asylum status restored.
Right. The only organization or persons who had anything negative to say about Aman Suleiman was the federal government. and then they dropped the entire case. And that was the surprising 180.
All right. Well, your coverage on that saga, and boy, that's a long time to be in detention as well. Certainly was revelatory to a lot of our readers. But the story continues. We're going to hopefully talk with him more about his experience being an ICE detainee in Butler County. And so stay tuned for more. Well, let's tee up our special guest, John Pepper. He's getting a pretty big honor.
He is. He's getting one of the top annual awards from the Freedom Center. They call them the Conductor Awards. People like Nelson Mandela and Rosa Parks have gotten it before him. He says it's, I think he's going to be his usual humble self, but he has been the driver of that center since its creation. He really was a co-founder. He served as a president for 1 year when they were between leaders. He's been on the board from the very beginning. He's, you know, put Procter & Gamble's support behind the center. So this is a big award, but one that's not wholly unexpected.
All right. And with that, excellent setup, Patty. Let's bring on retired Procter & Gamble CEO, John Pepper. It is special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. As promised, we are just so thrilled to be in the home of John Pepper, and we have so many questions for you. First, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
And I think the first question is a lot of our listeners, a lot of people who revere you in this town for all that you have done, just want to know how you are doing.
I'm doing as well as I could hope, and I'm grateful for every day. I lost my wife of almost 58 years 6 months ago at the end of this week. And I'd always hoped and prayed I'd die before Francie. I figured she'd do a lot better on her own than I would. But I'm doing okay. And I'm in no small measure propelled by her her demand, really, desire that I push on, continue to do things. God's ordained for me to be here a bit longer, and I want to take advantage of that, importantly, to carry on pursuits that she believes so deeply in. Abused women, YWCA, Women Helping Women, and other organizations. So I'll do what I can to carry on what she so much has done and putting in place, and I'm surrounded by a wonderful family. I've got four children, four wonderful spouses, 10 grandchildren, 21 to 10, and wonderful caregivers in the house. So I'm doing pretty well and grateful, just grateful for every day.
John, thank you so much for welcoming us. We're going to start with a question. You are set, as we're recording this, set to receive a big award from the Cincinnati Underground Railroad Freedom Center, always a mouthful. The International Freedom Conductor Award. So a lot of our listeners know that you have been involved for a very long time at the Freedom Center, co-founder, CEO, longtime board member. Can you talk about what drew you to that initiative and what's kept you involved? Why is this an important priority for you?
Well, it's an easy question to answer, but a long journey. I first became aware of the plan to develop the Freedom Center, as it became known, in 1997. I had just recently become the CEO of P&G, and I was approached at that time for lead funding from Procter & Gamble and for the release of a person who wanted to join the Freedom Center as the first CEO, Ed Rigaud, my blood brother Ed Rigaud. And I agreed. I think within 48 hours, I would insist 24 hours. And why did I agree on the spot pretty much to do this? And it was a confluence of a couple of things. One, I'm a deep believer in history, and the power of history to teach what we should try to emulate and then what we dare not do again. And the power of history to bring to life individuals who, by their individual agency, had made a difference. That backdrop kind of led me to the Underground Railroad as a natural place to start, because I found from my history that that was really the first movement I was aware of where people who were different in religion, race, came together to help one another, often at risk of their own lives, contravening what was taught in religion at the time by some religions, to help another person get free. And I thought that was a pretty grand idea. And I had seen how challenged that idea was in the world in which I had lived. head of international, I'd seen genocidal violence in Bosnia, Herzegovina. We had civil unrest in our own city. So I thought if we could marry the lessons from this history to contemporaneous events or urgencies, needs, that it would be a good thing. I'd also, by that time in my life, acquired a deep appreciation of the power of diversity. When I was growing up, I wouldn't know what diversity even meant. But by this time, I had come to see the power of people coming together who were different in outlook, mentality, experience, learning from one another, helping one another. But I also had come to see how easy it was for templates to keep us apart, badges we might have of another person. So I thought here was the path through history and through dialogue that we wanted to do and yet still in co-eight manner when we started it at the Freedom Center, that this was worthy of pursuit. So off we went, Edward Goh and I and Judge Jones and so many other people who nurtured my vision along the way to create this place. And here we are, what? How many years later is it? You can figure the math, but it's a long time. and we're still at it. And the fact of the matter is that the issue we confront, and that is people coming together of social injustice that still exists despite all the gains we've made, that we need to address those realities and see what we can do in our own life to make some difference and not be driven to numbness by the cavalcade of things that combat us. So that was the beginning. Never would have I imagined that I would be sitting here talking to you in the year 2025 about an upcoming IFCA, let alone one in which I'd be honored, because I've been at all of them. And I've seen Nelson Mandela up there and Bishop Tutu and Judge Jones. And I could go on the list, starting with, of course, Rosa Parks in 1999. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredible honor, needless to say, one I never would have expected, nor feel I deserved. But here we are, and I'm just proud of what people have created.
Do you think that the center has move the needle on race relations? Has it helped bring attention to racial injustice, racial division in our country?
Well, I'm sure it has. The question always is, has it done it as well as it could? It isn't just my opinion. Having been at P&G my whole career, I'm a real addict for getting data and playback. I want to hear what people think, not just what I think. So I've even, right to this past year, gotten testimonials, comments on how it could be better from visitors. And I've been reinforced in those comments from kids, from adults, and how it's changed their view of truth and reality, and how it's affected the way they think they should and can act. So yes, absolutely. I know it has because people have told me it has. And whenever I needed a dose of adrenaline, we were out raising money, of course, I'd go down and I'd want to be with a tour group of kids. And I'd want to hear the dialogue between the kids and the docent about what they were learning. And it was downright inspiring. So absolutely, yes, it's made a difference. Can it make a bigger difference? Absolutely. We have all kinds of technologies available today to communicate. We didn't have 20 years ago. We built this place 20 years ago. Now it's been updated. We've done a major exhibit on modern-day slavery since then. But we have a major campaign underway now to update the technology, communication, making it easier for people to understand how they can link with local organizations that are interested in what they're interested in, whatever that is, housing, whatever it is. So, yes, that's a long answer to your question. Yes, it's made a difference. Can it make a bigger difference? Yes. And are the opportunities to do it available today? Yes.
Very good. Thanks. I want to ask you the same about Cincinnati Youth Collaborative, which you helped co-found around that same era. Why has that been a priority, and how has that group changed issues around young people in the Cincinnati community?
Really, my leading involvement in the Cincinnati Youth Collaborative came from Francie, because my wife Francie was a mentor, and she had a young girl in her 20s that she was mentoring, and she was telling me, hey, you know, John, this is really important. I said, well, I didn't need a lot of evidence, because people had mentored me, Procter & Gamble and teacher. But I became a deep believer, and still am, that the issue of having a relationship with an adult who believes in you, who cares in you, who thinks you matter, is of supreme importance. Supreme importance. We don't have enough of it. Many young people grow up today without the relationships I had in my life. The people reached out to me, brought me along. Part of that was just where and how I grew up. Part of it was joining Procter & Gamble and being in the Navy. So I've seen these lives changed, and we have every year, of course, a major event where young women and men stand up and say how their lives have been changed, totally changed, because of the relationship that was formed with them. And I have more and more believed in the things that I want to try to support in whatever time I have left on this earth are things that are touching individual lives to make a difference. And that's what the CYC does, and through its mentoring program, its tutoring program. There's a new development, though, I'm very excited about in Cincinnati, which we need more of, and that is the coming together of all the different mentoring organizations. There are many, many great mentoring and tutoring organizations, and Camp All Candor, they haven't worked that well together in the past. Siloism is alive and well in nonprofits, just as it is in business. It's a natural way of existence, but we need to overcome it. And it's being overcome by a movement that I think is called We Cincinnati, We Mentor Cincinnati. It's going to be a bringing together of all these different groups, adopt a class, boys, girls, young girls, all of them together being convened, to see what the totality of needs or opportunities are for mentoring, and to see how the different groups, some age 5th and 6th grade, 7th and 8th grade, high school, can come together better. Because the biggest challenge we have today in our nation, in my opinion, is helping young people grow up. Grow up to be able to do something they want to do and can do, and that fits with the job profiles that exist today in today's environment. And mentoring isn't the whole ticket to that, but it's a big ticket. And these relationships are really big.
I'm sure you've been watching the city struggle with violence, particularly violent acts committed by youth to other youth, to others.
Yes, I am.
Do you think that city leadership is taking enough advantage of some of these resources that you describe as many times siloed, but are we, in your opinion, is current political leadership taking advantage of some of these more philanthropic efforts that are available?
It's hard for me to answer that question with certainty, but I doubt it. I doubt if they're taking full advantage of it. I mean, there is a one of the things that stimulated our commitment to the Cincinnati Youth Collaborative was the model of Boston. And we learned about the mayor of Boston. And the mayor of Boston would not make any speech on any subject without starting out and focusing on mentoring. He just thought, I want mentors. Now, I'm not making a comment about AFTAB and what his priorities are, but I am saying that I think if I were the mayor of this city, I would be leading how I could get mentoring, or you call it what you want, relationships formed with young people. that can be productive and help them see a path. Young people need hope, and they need direction, and they need some steps on how to achieve that hope. And we can do that. We can do that. We can do that better than we are. We must do that better than we are today. And yes, political leadership has a very important role, but so does business. So do churches, for heaven's sakes, and synagogues. This brings me to the entire subject, which all of us, I think, listening to this podcast would agree with. It's so important we work together across the communities to advance the most important purposes in the community, whether that be homelessness, development of youth, health, whatever it is. Because we've got amazing resources in this community, just amazing. And to the extent we can have people working together in a concerted way, we're going to far better be able to meet the objectives that we have in common, which is we want to be a healthy city. We want to be a city which I found, which I didn't know, Cincinnati. I flew in here thinking I'd arrived at the wrong airport. They said, welcome to Covington. I said, oh, my God, I chose the wrong airplane. But it wasn't. But I discovered in Cincinnati something I never expected, because I grew up in West East Coast, and I discovered a city large enough that it had everything, but small enough where I felt every group in the city felt it could make a contribution. That's different than Chicago, I think, or New York. They've got everything, but they're so big that people can honestly wonder, can I possibly make a difference? I don't think that's the case here. At least I never found it to be the case. I found it in this city that business can look at it and say, I need and can make a contribution. We have the best hospitals going in the country, perhaps. Great universities. So different than when I joined. So different, so grown since I joined the company in 1963 at Procter & Gamble. So we've got wonderful assets, and we're still, I think, enough of a community of a size that we can and should expect to work together.
Well, I'm glad you stuck with us, even though you arrived in Covington. I think you've made a difference in the city of Cincinnati. Yeah. I want to ask you about some of your other endeavors. You seem to be quite a prolific writer. You have a blog that is still active, 30-some posts this calendar year alone, a couple of 2-3 books. But I want to ask you about a book that I'm told you are writing, 100 Books That Most Influenced My Life. So tell us about that book and maybe some of your favorite titles.
Well, let me correct the title to nitpick it.
Okay.
The actual title is 100 Books That Shaped My Life.
That Shaped My Life. Okay.
And I...
That's important if people are searching for it.
I arrived... Exactly. You won't find it anywhere, but that happens to be the title. I arrived at no small part thanks to my son, David, who... thought some of the titles I had were too far-reaching. In any event, yes, I'm about finished with that, and there were 100 of them, and I've cheated a bit. I put in something at the end called Quick Takes, which allowed me to drop in the 20 or others. I couldn't get in 100. But you ask for the 100, it's so hard to pick them. I would certainly pick Leadership is an Art by Max Dupree. I could pick any number of books by John Meacham, but if I had to pick one, and I have 5 of them in this 100, it would be Soul of America, which defines so much what we need in this country today is to find the soul of America. And we don't have to make it up. It's there. Another would be a book by Rabbi Joshua Liebman, who I found out, he actually grew up in Hamilton, Ohio, and he passed away at the age of only 47. But in any event, he wrote a wonderful book, which influenced my thinking, I think perhaps my moral and spiritual development very significantly, called Peace of Mind. Now, mind you, this book was written a long, long time ago, but I think it's been... And, of course, the biography by my dear friend David Blight, Frederick Douglass, which stands tall among any biography I've ever read or perhaps ever been written. I feel so grateful to all these authors that I've kind of met along the way, what they've written. There's a lot of fiction in there. The Mercantile Library asked me years ago to come down and talk about my favorite book, and they probably thought I'd come down talk about a business book. I didn't. I talked about a novel written by Wallace Stegner called Crossing to Safety. And I picked that book, and it would still be among my less than handful of favorite novels because it developed what the interior of a marriage is like. An interior of a marriage and the interior of family relationships between two families that grew up together better than any other book I ever read. So those are some of the books that I've just I've gained so much from, and I've enjoyed writing it. I don't really write it. I mean, these are reviews, but also a lot of reflections. And so I write in the preface, I've got to warn you a couple of things in embarking on this 500-page book. One, you're probably going to learn more about me than you ever wanted to. And second, don't dare think about reading this from front to back. You've got to go in and try to see if you can pick out something that you find.
So it's more of a reference book.
Reference book, or pick out something that sounds interesting or remotely interesting and go there. And if it is, great. If it's not, move on. And if you move to two or three, forget the whole thing.
Sounds like a good Christmas present. I have a couple more questions and then we'll go back to Burl. So in your blog, I did read a few of your recent postings. You do kind of lightly, gently talk about our political climate. And I just wonder what you might offer. What do you make of our current, you know, I would call it fraught in the nicest of terms. Well, how would you describe our current political climate?
Well, polarized, of course, would be the word. Fraught, dysfunctional. Maybe dysfunctional, above all. And, you know, we've been here before. As I mentioned, I've studied history. We've been torn apart in the 1850s and McCarthy era. But I've never seen it quite like this, where differences in political position have become moral absolutes. If you don't agree with me on this, there's something more wrong. And we've got to get over that. And the main thing we've got to do is really what the Freedom Center, coming back to that, seeks to do, and that's help people understand one another. You know, I've been sick for a bit. My wife was very sick, God bless her. The only good thing about being sick is you get to see caregivers. And you see the goodness of caregivers, and you see their life stories that they've lived. And you see how much in common we've really got as we pursue life. So I just hope we can take what we are we're a very diverse society. There's no question, that's math, it's observation. The key is, do we cross over those bridges to actually understand each other's stories? Do we listen to one another? And we're not good listeners, and we need to, and we need to be intentional about it. Because from that listening comes more benefit, certainly I have found, than I'll ever give to somebody else by listening, just by hearing what they have to share. So yes, it's fraught. Is it something we should throw up our hands and despair on? No. My wife, her final words in a podcast she gave in 2012 to her Smith class, and she was doing a podcast, and they asked her, what kept you going? What would be your motivation? And she said a few words I absolutely love. She said, when you find something that needs to be done, just go do it. And try to bring other people along with you. Try to bring other people along with you, as many as you can. Just do it. Don't stand back. I just love those words. Hmm. Just do it. Don't stand back. Bring other people along with you. Well, you can't bring other people along with you if you don't listen to them. Or if you just go tell them, here's the way it's going to be. That doesn't work. So those are words that I will have emblazoned in my mind as long as I live, that she said in that podcast she did some, 13 years ago.
Just do it.
I've heard that somewhere.
Just do it. I mean, I guess Nike can learn from that.
I guess so.
Right?
Maybe they were talking to your wife.
Yeah.
I have one last question, and that has to do with your long years in corporate life. Obviously, you were the head of Procter & Gamble, and then you spent a fair amount of time leading the Disney company. So, I don't know. It's been a little while since you've been in the day-to-day of corporate world. What do you remember from those days, or what's your takeaway from your contribution? You know, as you look back and you go, I was happiest, I was proudest of doing this at Procter & Gamble or this at Disney.
Yeah, I think the thing I'm proudest of, I feel best about, is the extent to which I can legitimately feel, based on what I know and what I've heard, that I've made a difference in somebody else's life. When all is said and done, there are certain accomplishments you have, milestones you set, business, etc. But in the end, what we leave behind is really the influence we've had on other people, starting with our family. 1, 2, 3. That's it. And then other people who we've encountered in our professional life or volunteer life. I appreciated that to a degree growing up. Because I saw the impact on me other people had had, but I've come to appreciate it more and more in the context of the question you raised, which is looking back, what matters most in my looking back? And some of the same thing would be true. You asked about Disney, where I was chairman for 5 years and on the board a little bit longer than that. I think if I've made a difference there, it would have been with other board members to support Bob Iger, and he had just become the CEO when I joined the board. He'd taken over from Eisner, and I believed in him, and I believed in the Walt Disney Company, and I encouraged him, supported him, I hope he would feel, in things that he wanted to do, including acquisition of Pixar, Marvel. There were some other things, but in general, I just think it would have been, again, the influence I hopefully had on some Disney employees and maybe a fellow board member or two, to be our best selves. You know, try to be our best selves and help another person be their best self if they see being a best self. That would be the range of my answer to your question. Thinking back, it is a long time now, although P&G is in my blood, just like the day I left it, and I feel so good about the company that it's got its challenges, always will. But I know enough of the top people to feel that the values of the place, its commitment to excellence, to doing the right thing, to winning, to innovation, continue on. It's an amazing company, really. I never thought I'd go into business. I'd been admitted to Harvard Law School. I was going into business for 1 year and then asked for a deferral for 1 year from Harvard. They give it to me. I called them after 6 months. I said, I'm not here, see, but I'm not coming to Harvard. I love this company. And who would have thought? I've been so blessed in my life, above all, bumping into this woman, Francie Garber, in the infield of the Kentucky Derby. In May of 1964, I was on a blind date. There she was. After 3 years groveling, she agreed to marry me. We've been married for 58 years. No, it's been a pretty blessed life.
Well,
very blessed.
Condolences on her loss. We'll end with a few questions from my editor, Barry Love.
I intended this to be kind of like the lightning round, just some quick questions.
Well, sure.
Although, looking at my list, some of them might not have quick answers, but we'll try.
Well, with me, they may not.
Well, all right.
I'm not good
First
at this.
First one. If there was a Mount Rushmore of Cincinnati business leaders, titans who have made a difference in our community, I would put you up there in that Mount Rushmore. Who else would you think should be in that Mount Rushmore of Cincinnati business leaders?
Well, I certainly put Carliner up there. I put Dick Farmer up there for sure. I think I'd put Bob Castellini up there. And maybe those names come immediately to my mind.
Oh, that's good.
Those
that
are pretty good.
That fills out the mountain
that's
nicely.
Four. There you go.
All right.
I don't know how many people I can have up here.
All right. Not to put you on the spot, but is there a Procter & Gamble product that you can't live without?
Oh, there are a lot. I couldn't live without Tide.
Tide? Okay.
By the way, on that Mount Rushmore, you got to put another person up there, and that's John Smale, speaking of Procter & Gamble.
Yes.
John Smale would be probably the single finest executive I ever worked with.
All right. It has been said that Cincinnati's governmental structure is very parochial. Other metro areas have consolidated county and regional governments, like Nashville has done that in Indianapolis. Should Cincinnati consider a more metro-style government?
I think so. I think so. I think Louisville has done that. I think we could work better between the county and the city, if that's what you mean by metro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we should. Absolutely.
All right. You came to Cincinnati. You never really left.
Well, I left. We left 4 years in Rome. We left 5 years in Brussels.
But you always come back.
You bet.
If you weren't living in Cincinnati, where would you choose to live?
Rome. Always Rome.
That's interesting. And finally, I'm sure people are always seeking your advice, whether it's, you know, business advice or secrets to a long and prosperous marriage. Is there a piece of advice that you give that you personally have a hard time following yourself?
Yeah. I'd say on the subject, people would ask, what's the secret to your long marriage? And I would say today, would have said for some years, three things. Love, and I don't mean that romantic love, I mean deep love. You can't imagine being with another person is be as happy as you are here. Two, patience. Patience. I could have done with more patience. And understanding not everything is really that big a deal. If another person wants to do it this way, okay, do it that way. And the other is understanding. And understanding how the world is viewed by another person who's really close to you, but you really don't understand fully, even if you think you do, how they're experiencing it. Those would be the three things.
Well, on that note, I'm going to try to follow all of that, by the way. We want to thank you so much for inviting us into your home, John Pepper, spending some time with us, sharing your thoughts. Thank you again for being our guest this week on the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, Patty, I have a list of books I want to read now.
I'm going to buy that for Christmas. I really am.
Are you?
I am.
And kind of pick and choose different books to read.
Yeah, his list is a little more elevated than my typical crappy fiction list.
Well, it's amazing to me, people who are so accomplished, and you would think that they would be too busy to read, let alone write, because, you know, he's written books and essays. He's a voracious reader. Maybe that's why he's so smart.
Maybe.
So I have a little That's So Cincinnati moment to share with you.
Please do.
Yes. They say that there's 6 degrees of separation between anybody and Kevin Bacon, right? And in Cincinnati, I think it's like 1 degree of separation between anybody. So he mentioned Ed Rigaud, another Procter & Gamble executive that was instrumental in the establishment and even operating for a while the Underground Railroad Freedom Center. So Ed Rigaud, his family lived in Forest Park. That's where I grew up. I went to high school with Ed's daughter and the Rigaud family. So I knew Ed Rigaud. I didn't know he was this big, important person. Ed Rigaud was just Simone's dad. And the Rigaud family, you know, their house was the place that, like, you know, their parents, they didn't care if kids, teens were hanging out late at night. They were just happy everybody was around. It was, you know, there's in your friends group growing up, there's always that one family or that one household that everybody seems to be magnetized to. That was the Rigaud house in Forest Park. So
the cool dad house,
the cool dad, but especially the cool mom, like Mrs. Rigaud, Carol Rigaud, who herself is a force of nature in town in terms of giving back and her leadership she's provided. I've run into the Rigauds from time to time, you know, occupational hazard I have going to like dinners and stuff like that. And I will run into the Rigauds and I immediately shift from, you know, gray-haired seasoned editor of the Cincinnati Enquirer to this like teenager. And I'm like, hello, Mr. and Mrs. Rigaud. I mean, it's so funny how certain people in your lives just like the, you know, they will always be those, you know, parents in the neighborhood that everybody respected, had no idea at the time all the important things Ed was doing. So that just proves to show that, like, you know, I guess I have a one degree of separation to John Pepper through Ed Rigaud.
You do. Cincinnati is a big, small town.
He mentioned that too, you know?
He did. He did talk about that.
Yeah.
Flying in and just what, how much you can get done in Cincinnati because of its size. Now, let me do a quick Cincinnati moment.
Yeah.
I met John Pepper back in the mid-1980s during my first tour of duty here at the Enquirer when I covered Procter & Gamble. So, you know, every two or three times a year, you would get an audience with the CEO, maybe around the annual meeting time. And I interviewed him. I interviewed Ed Arzt. I don't think I interviewed John Smale, but a lot of these titans of industry, these icons of Procter & Gamble that he offered during our interview are really memorable. And I remember being very scared sitting in a big conference room with these elevated CEOs and trying to ask some intelligent questions.
They can be intimidating, but he's such a nice guy. Very
such
disarming.
A nice guy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. I never met John Smale. I heard the same about him. But yeah, when you think about people who could have just focused on their corporate role, but didn't, understood that with their position, they could be a force for good. John Pepper, there are few that can match what he has done for the city. So
absolutely. He has not retired from his civic life.
No, he has not. And what a treat to have him on the podcast. Well, Patty, shall we wrap this up?
We shall.
All right. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of the Enquirer and Cincinnati.com.
And if you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves things, all things Cincinnati.
All things.
All things.
Finally, if you value local journalism, and I know you do, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks so much.